Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Nicole Batty was diagnosed with stage 3 undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma after years of stomach pain and GI issues shortly after getting married. Now, she's cancer-free and a new mother, despite being told she may not be able to have kids. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Batty shares her story and advice for others.
I did want to start out with if you could tell me more about how your journey began with your cancer diagnosis.
Basically, it kind of goes back a little bit before my cancer diagnosis because my husband and I got married in 2014. His name is Wes and absolute love of my life. And shortly after we got married, I was having all of these like stomach and GI issues. And it had been about 3 years that we had been going through that with me struggling with tolerating food or getting sick every time that I ate. And so I was doing all these different diets. I saw all these different kinds of specialists. I had more ultrasounds than I can even count to see if they could figure out what was going wrong. And then one day, it was in the summer of 2017, I stopped tolerating food entirely. And that had never happened before. And they wanted to ultrasound me again. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, like we're doing this again, you know, wasn't expecting them to find anything. And because they kept checking my gallbladder. And so they checked, they ordered a CT scan and there ended up being in the surgery when they were removing the gallbladder because they found something was wrong with the gallbladder. Through a series of tests, they ended up finding nearby that there was about a racquetball sized tumor, but they said that it probably wasn't going to be cancer. It was a less than 1% chance that it was cancer. So during the surgery, they only did a partial removal of it. But when they sent it off to pathology 12 days later, it came back as stage 3 undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma.
You were dealing with a lot of stomach and GI issues. Outside of that, in terms of, you know, casual life, what was your life like leading up to your diagnosis?
Yeah, so I was working in the marketing department at the State Realtor Association. And I mean, I had stomach issues and stuff that was going on, but life was amazing. I mean, my husband and I are best friends. So we would travel a lot, adventure a lot. We had just gotten back from celebrating our 3-year wedding anniversary in Hawaii. I mean, things were really, really beautiful. And then this diagnosis happened and it rocked our world. I mean, it was life-changing. And I think one of the craziest things about the diagnosis is whenever we had further evaluation, they said that it was my gallbladder the whole time that was causing the symptoms because nothing showed up in my blood work for the sarcoma. And they said with that size and in that location, it wouldn't have caused any of the other symptoms. So the tumor was considered a misfinding. And they said it was such a blessing for us because by the time it would have started causing symptoms in that location, it probably would have been stage 4 and had metastasized. So even though there was this suffering period of 3 years, it feel very blessed to look back and see like, wow, like had I not gone through that for 3 years to find it at this exact moment, what was going on, then we could have missed it. And I might have not even been here. So they were just doing the wrong test. I needed a nuclear medicine scan on it where they injected a tracer. And so when they finally did the right test, they found out that it was only excreting, I think at 25% of what it was supposed to. And so, but that doesn't show up in an ultrasound or a CT scan, but again, I can see all of God's working in it because, I mean, had it been found earlier, you know, we would have never even looked in that area and found the cancer.
So then when you got those results back from the biopsy that they did on the tumor, what were your thoughts?
It was crazy because, you know, you hear there's less than a 1% chance that it's going to be cancer. And then you get diagnosed with a cancer that less than 1% of people get. And so, you know, it was shocking. I mean, I think our whole world, you know, stood still for a moment, but we had to speed back up and quickly come up with a game plan because it was described to us as angry, aggressive, and high grade. And so we knew we needed to take a course of action very quickly. And so we just kind of got our game faces on and, you know, we're ready to do whatever it took. And due to the rarity of it, we wanted me to be treated at a high volume clinic. At the time, we were living in Colorado. And my surgeon in Colorado recommended MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. And so what was kind of amazing about that is my parents had lived in Colorado for 8 years. And a month prior to my diagnosis, my dad had a job transfer down to the Houston area. They were still moving their boxes in when I got my diagnosis, and they allowed us to come and stay with them so I could be treated at MD Anderson. So it was found miraculously through this misfinding, right? And then we have a place to stay right next to a high volume clinic. I don't know. I think it was moments like that where I was like, wow, like we can do this. We have been blessed even in this crazy storm to have found it, to have a place to stay, and we're going to give it all we've got. And, you know, getting such a difficult diagnosis, proactively seeking out the things to be grateful for and finding the joyful moments through that was completely necessary just to keep our heads on straight and to be focused and, you know, to have the energy to fight this aggressive cancer. You know, also allowed ourselves to feel, allowed ourselves to process through our feelings too. I knew I had this beautiful life with my husband and was just so grateful. And even if, I don't know, even if I didn't get delivered from the cancer, I felt very grateful for this life that I had, even though it was a short 27 years, if that was what the plan was for my life.
So then when you moved to Texas, what was kind of the treatment journey?
Whenever we got there, we had to do kind of a series of tests to see what I was going to need because part of the cancer had already been removed. And so, you know, they wanted to figure out, learn a little bit more about the type of cancer, figure out what we still needed to do. And so they ordered 6 rounds of chemotherapy that they wanted to follow up with radiation, which I didn't end up having the radiation, but, and then scheduled me to have the Whipple procedure, which is a major open surgery that was going to be used to remove the entirety of the cancer. We were very surprised when we found out that I was going to need chemo. I honestly thought that I was just going to be coming down for surgery. I just had no idea that I was going to need chemo. And so, you know, I think one of the first questions that I asked was, you know, am I going to lose my hair? And they said, yeah, the combination therapy that I was going to need, one of them was going to cause the hair loss. And so I was not ready or prepared for any of that. It was honestly just kind of taking things one day at a time, one thing at a time, and knowing that things can change at the drop of a hat and just trying to be agile with the change and not getting too set in stone on a specific route or a specific therapy and just knowing that they're going to do whatever is best and whatever comes up, we're just going to roll with it and just take it one day at a time. And, but I think that, you know, God's grace in those moments was kind of what kept us hanging on. And my husband was Superman, I swear. He's just amazing every step of the way. He got up, went on a leave of absence from work, and he was with me through every step of it.
You sound like a fairly positive person, but of course, going through an experience like this, it's difficult, it's hard, and it's really scary. So what and who just kept you going through the entire process?
My faith was a huge factor in that, just kind of keeping my eyes on eternity, finding the silver linings to things of just how God was working through this. I journaled every day through it, and that helped me process through my thoughts a lot, writing out prayers, writing out what happened during the day, how I felt, my emotions, very raw, very real. So many people sent us like cards and gifts, and people did fundraisers for us, from making t-shirts to throwing like big events. I mean, all these different things that happened that people did to support us was amazing. But my absolute number one was my husband, Wes. He was at every treatment. He never left my side. He was always there to hold me if I cried, to cheer me on, encourage me. I mean, even when I was getting chemotherapy, he would crawl in the hospital bed with me and hold me close. He always did stuff to make me laugh. Like there was a time in the middle of the night where we were staying with my parents and I couldn't sleep because of one of the medications I was on. And we snuck out, quote unquote, as young adults, right? At my parents' house, snuck out, went and got fast food together. And he just always did everything that he could to try to make me laugh and smile. And so I didn't feel like I was missing out on anything. He created this new life for us to be living together. And there was some of the most beautiful moments I've ever experienced, even through the hardest season of my life. He was, is everything, and he's been everything. He was before, and he was during, and he is after. And I think just seeing somebody live out their vows in sickness and in health, for better, for worse, or until death do us part, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed. And, you know, I wouldn't have necessarily seen that without us having faced a great trial. So we grew very close during this time. And through the many things that came up, we had multiple changes in treatment. I ended up developing a blood clot. I was hospitalized and they didn't think I was going to make it after my fourth round of chemo. And so we planned my funeral. I just turned 28 and he was 31 and we planned my funeral in the hospital together. And I asked him if I didn't make it out of the hospital, because we do the power of attorney, living will, everything. And I said, if I don't make it out of the hospital, will you please just make sure that you share my journal entries, like share what God has done through to share our relationship, our story, share with other people who are going through cancer so they feel like they have somebody to relate to. But please share it, promise me. And he said, I promise you, but I have a feeling that it's going to be you that gets to share it. And it's just amazing, because since then I've been able to publish a book that includes my journal entry. It was just beautiful watching that come full circle. I just feel very grateful. I lost 75% of my follicles and my blood levels were really low after chemo. And so they did not think that we would be able to have kids. And here we are with baby number one. So it was really difficult, because when we got there, I was doing all of my initial blood work and tests when they were trying to figure out what treatment to do. They had scheduled me an appointment with an oncofertility specialist at MD Anderson. And she was wonderful. The problem was that with the location and the aggressiveness of my tumor, there was no time. I had to start chemo within a week. So there was no time to preserve eggs. There was no time for us to do any fertility saving measures. And so it was go time. And so, you know, we had always talked about having kids between, you know, 3 to 5 years and like visiting that conversation. And we just celebrated 3 years. And we were just told that, hey, like, it's not looking good and there's nothing we can do to preserve this. And that was hard. That was heartbreaking. And I don't know why in my mind I thought that it would be okay because I didn't have radiation. But after treatment and after I became cancer free, when they did the analysis, they found that we had lost 75% of the follicles and my AMH level was really low. And so it did not look like we would be able to get pregnant. I think I had like 5 follicles left and they were literally described as shriveled. Like they were like nothing. And so they said, but you know, you shouldn't even try to have a kid for 2 years anyway. And so our window was so small, because with the way that they were shriveled, we didn't even know if it would be possible to have a child, and especially after having waited 2 years. And so 2 years later, we went back in for another test because my husband had told me he really wanted to try to have kids. And they said that 75% of my follicles had quote unquote woken up, and that if we got approval from the oncologist, we could try. And I was blown away. I didn't even know that follicles could wake up. It can happen sometimes. And so we met with a high risk doctor, my OB, our oncologist. Everybody gave us the green light to try. And so I got off of my birth control. And within the first month of us trying, we became pregnant naturally with our little girl. And she is absolutely perfect. Nothing wrong with her. Everything is just amazing. She's just perfect. She's their little miracle. When you hear the words, you know, you have cancer, there's nothing like it, because my entire life, cancer was always this terrible disease that somebody else had. And we had to rewrite a definition to now it's this disease that we have, you know, like as a diagnosee. And so it can feel kind of earth shattering, you know. I mean, I think a lot of people go to places of I'm not going to live, or not being able to have children. I've been cancer free now for 3.5 years and we have a baby, even with aggressive chemo treatment. I really hope that it brings hope and encouragement, and that anything is possible, and that just because you're diagnosed with cancer does not mean that it's a death sentence or that it's going to take away all the joyful things in your life. But I think that there's even joy and beauty in this redirected purpose. I think that there's a process of maybe grieving some of that and the loss of things, whether it's stuff that you used to be able to do, or, I mean, I have a giant scar on my stomach. I mean, there's a lot of things that we go through, that we grieve, that we are processing through, but just finding joy in the reroute of life and finding a new direction. And there's just amazing things that can happen in that too. And so just to provide hope in that area as well.
Going back to 3.5 years ago, tell me about the day that you found out that you were cancer free.
Oh my goodness. So the day that I found out that I was cancer free, so we had gone through 4 rounds of chemotherapy and I was supposed to have 6, but after the 4th round was when I was hospitalized and all of my levels were just really messed up. So they said that my tumor was no longer responding to chemotherapy and that because of how aggressive it was on my body wasn't even tolerating it. And so the best decision was to stop chemotherapy. And then they decided that radiation was not going to be safe due to the location. And so we immediately moved on to the surgery. And so the Whipple procedure, if you're not familiar with it, it's a 4 to 6 hour open surgery. Again, that can vary depending on each case by case, but it's a removal of the gallbladder, which I already had removed, removal of the head of the pancreas and the second quadrant of the small intestine. And then the small intestine and the pancreas have to be reconnected, which is very difficult. And then an entire reroute of your intestines. And then for my surgery specifically, they were looking at removing half of my stomach as well as part of my colon. And so it was going to be a huge life-altering surgery that I was going to be having. And so they looked at the scan and knew exactly what they were going to do, showed the cancer on it just a couple weeks prior because it hadn't shrunk in a couple of weeks. And when they went in to do the surgery, they made a 9-inch incision in my abdomen and there wasn't any cancer anywhere. And so the cancer was gone. So they just took a sample of the tissue of the area where they saw it on the scan just to evaluate it. And then they closed me back up. And so it was a miracle. I have been cancer-free ever since. And so it was this beautiful moment of being cancer-free and then learning that I didn't even have to have the Whipple procedure. And so I have this scar in my abdomen. I call it my miracle mark. Then in December, recovered from surgery and wound care from the surgery. And about a month after that, we moved back to Colorado and started the recovery process. And then now we've been down here, but having been scanned every 3 months since then, I've been cancer-free ever since.
So then with your blog, Sparkly Survivor, yep. Did you start that during your treatment or was that kind of something that started once you became cancer-free?
Once I became cancer-free, so I had actually gotten off of social media a couple of months prior to being diagnosed. I was just taking a break. And then when I got diagnosed, I was like, well, I'm certainly not getting back on right now. And so, and then I decided after that I wanted to share the story and I wanted to change how I did my social media. I wanted to write because I love writing and knew I wanted to write a book. And I felt like I now had this story to share. First time that I wrote and heard people reach out to me and saying things like, hey, me too. That's how I felt too, or that's how I feel. I wasn't really afraid to share anymore. You know, it was whether it was infertility or struggles of survivor's guilt or, you know, whatever it was, just the amount of responses. It was just amazing, like how we're able to connect with people through that. And then my husband, Wes, has written a couple of things on the blog too about being a caregiver. And so we just want to help and love people. So many people helped and loved us through the journey. And we just wanted to share and spread that love even further as an expression of gratitude and love because we couldn't have done it without other people. And now we had the opportunity being in a place of being healthy and or on the road back to being healthy that we could hopefully help make an impact as well.
What's next for you?
So had the opportunity to write the book, which that was like a huge bucket list item for me. Since then, I have co-authored a women's Bible study that I actually just was able to kind of help run. And I'm starting a new position after maternity leave as a women's pastor, which I'm really excited about. And so that's kind of a new thing for us. But yeah, I want to continue to write books and I just love being able to advocate and just want to be just a stellar mom to this little baby girl. We're excited for places to open back up again. We really loved volunteering at Children's Hospital. So to be able to volunteer back at, you know, a cancer center again, we had the opportunity to go do a lobby day at Washington, D.C. for One Voice Against Cancer. We'd love to do more stuff like that. Yeah, so hopefully lots more books and more advocating in the future. If anybody wants to connect or talk, my email address is connect@sparklysurvivor.com. I just want to encourage people to reach out. Like you don't have to do this alone. There's a cancer community out there. There are people that are going through it or have gone through it that can be there for you, that can walk with you. You know, the feelings that you feel, the emotions that you've gone through. There are people that want to process through that with you. You're not alone. And, you know, just to keep going and knowing that you still have purpose in this life. And again, even if things look redirected or it's a tough season right now, just to not lose hope. And I just hope that this story encourages and brings that light and that hope to other people as well.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.